Blog Talk Radio.
Word jy die machtige trainer? Oor die veld kom dit wyd gesweef. Die lied van die volk se ontwaken, wat harte laat sidder en beef.
Ek smoeg vir die vrese waarmee ons moet lewe, vir gans en vir moord en vir ryp. Ek smoeg vir die bad news, vir Zuma en sy views, waarna ons op TV moet kyk. Ek wil nie meer hoor hoe ons tieners begrawe, oor niemand al steur aan die wet. Ek wil nie meer lees van affirmative action, op een klei om te hou wat ek het. Gee vir my een nieuwe gein, een koos toe plissie en een tellerij, wat lief die sim en skruid en strijd, voor die mooi van ons land en ons recht om hier te kan blij. Ek stiek vir my lemma, sy leens en sy sê maar, ons hou maar ons mond en betaal. Ons kruip weg in kampe, voor blind vir die rampe, en bid dat die Heer ons omhaal. Daar is Winnie Mandela, wat mense verbrand het, maar nou wil sy huil in haar hand. Staatskas is leeg en die ANC jeug saai verwoesting en pijn hier ons land. Gee vir my een nieuwe gein, een poos toe plissie en een tellerij, wat liefkie sing en skryf en strijd, voor die mooi van ons land en ons recht om hier te gaan blij. Vir die grond waar sy kinders, sy kinders kan bly. Maar sy huis en sy lande is nou in die hande van die vijand teen wie hy moes stry. Ons kinders verstaan nie waar bommel vandaan nie, al erfenis is uitgewis. Geen volkslied of vlag nie en geen ere wag nie vir die helde wat daar nie meer is. Gee vir my een nieuwe gein, een koos toe plissie en een tellerij, wat liefkie sing en skryf en strijd, voor die mooi van ons land en ons recht om hier te kan blij. Gee vir my een nieuwe gein, een koos toe plissie en een tellerij, wat liefkie sing en skryf en strijd, voor die mooi van ons land en ons recht om hier te gaan blij. En ons recht om hier te gaan blij.
Welcome to Radio Free South Africa with your host, Sculptor Namava, and myself, Karen Smith. Tonight our guest is Truth Stinger, also an AKA Becky Williams, the well-known host of Rage Against the Regime podcast. Becky has been a staunch supporter of our cause for over 5 years. And having run for office in Texas, she is very well-versed in politics, what it means, what it takes to be a politician, and why politicians don't listen to the people. So without more ado, good evening, Skull.
Good evening, Karen, and how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Rather good morning. Thank you again, as always, for getting up at 2 in the morning and doing this show. I hope you have a whole thermos glass of coffee to see you through it. And hello, Becky.
Lots of coffee, yes.
Hello, Biggie.
Hello, sister. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Fantastic. This is a new mic set, so I just needed to make sure you could hear me.
Yeah, that's a little soft, but other than that, it's fine. Becky, so you ran for office in Texas. You are closely involved in politics, and you're not just a keyboard cowboy. You are involved. You are on the streets, carrying posters, attending rallies, dealing with people all the time.
Yes, ma'am, that is a fact. And we have some very disturbing things going on here that we can connect back to this genocide movement in South Africa. And we had a guest on our show, Sunette Bridges, some years ago, you recall, and I asked her specifically, did she see the trend coming to America? And she said, yes, the warning signs are there. Well, we are in the middle of it now.
And not just us, Becky, but the whole world.
Yes, ma'am. It is affecting Eastern Europe. It's affecting every country that these so-called refugees or migrants from Africa are migrating to, or invading borders, as I would call it, because that's in fact what it is. And we are in serious, serious trouble because the attack against whites is a global attack.
There you go, Skulk. That is your cue to jump in.
That's indeed my cue. Yes, it's a pleasure and an honor to meet you. And that's exactly the trend that we've been following on the show over, I think, about last 2 years, all the guests here. And we've been speaking about this. This golden thread, if you want to call it that, of the planned destruction of civilization and the planned destruction of the white population and the European population,
yes,
across the globe is exactly what's going on. I can't agree more.
Yes, sir.
And we see it as a concerted effort and a planned effort. It's not by chance that all these things are happening. I don't know if that's also your take on this.
Yes, sir. I believe this has been well planned and orchestrated for some time. And this answers the question that we kept asking of our government in D.C., and AfriForum asked our government in D.C., why have you not intervened? Why have you given aid to the very people who are coming here to bring that havoc to America, to take that havoc to Europe? And now we know why. There are many things that are going on that people are not aware of, that need to be made aware of, these issues that are taking place. There's a lot of money exchanging hands. There are a lot of trade deals exchanging hands. And America has not intervened because of those trade deals.
Yes, because that is what we were told. It was the AGOA. The AGOA agreement, the African Growth Agricultural Growth Agreement, was the reason why America can't take any action just yet. So, you know, if you look at that agreement, it does make sense, but at the same time, it doesn't stop them having a look at why people are being killed at a rate of knots.
There's never an excuse for genocide.
That's problematic if I can come in there, because if you look at the AGOA, we're actually suffering in South Africa. Our farmers are suffering to a certain extent because of AGOA. So it was not only beneficial to us, it was definitely beneficial to the ANC government. And as you will remember, AGOA was brought in under the Obama regime, the Obama administration. It's not a Trump thing, it's an Obama thing. And even prior to that, for South Africans per se, yes, we've heard so much about the AGOA, but it's not to our benefit for that matter. It's portrayed, once again, it's portrayed as something very good, but it's not. I think it's only one of the factors. Becky, I want you to come to, and I think even very early in our program tonight, but to the crux of this thing, of why the Trump government is so quiet on the issue of South Africa. We had the Trump tweet We had Pompeo coming out and saying a few things. He came out yesterday or the day before, once again speaking of inalienable rights. But the Trump government is extremely quiet on the issue of South Africa and specifically what's going on. Let's leave white South Africans out there, but the violent situation, the violent situation in South Africa. Why is that? Specifically,
through our research on what's going on with China investing heavily into the Africas, with the change in currency exchange for resources such as fossil fuels, there's a financial battle for power. And we can only surmise that the reason we have not intervened is they have probably been told by China, this is our territory. And you're going to have to go through the UN, you're going to have to go through China for intervention. But I believe there's something else going on, because I recently did some research on the Mexican border that is being breached on a daily basis, with more than 100 million people now in our country who have supposedly fled here for asylum. They have not fled for asylum. They are opportunists. The ties of Uhuru, the ANC, the EEF, the BLM right here in America, they're all one and the same. The BLM has hosted Uhuru for the past 8 years on American soil. We never knew of the BLM until Obama went to Kenya and came back here, and we had the Black Lives Matter movement really take a catapult here in America. These are all tied together, and we now have an influx the last several years of Africans breaching that border through Mexico, but most rapidly in the last few months. And our government is allowing them into our country and giving them asylum on American soil. But they're strategically placing them on the East Coast and in Texas. Let that resonate. On the East Coast and in Texas. San Antonio has pulled funds from their fire department, from their forestry, from their libraries, from the police department, to fund these terrorists who are being brought in through the Mexican border. Now imagine, if you will, sir, Africa would not be a cheap journey by any means. It's my understanding they're making their way through Colombia. They're making their way through Brazil to come into America via Mexico. So they're flying in thousands of rands to get the flight, and they're coming through the Mexican border unabated, without identification, and entering America, and we are funding this. We are being forced to fund this through our tax dollars. And so we have a lot of different things that are going on. So I imagine that our American government is not being forthright and honest as to why they're not intervening in this genocide, why they're allowing forms of genocide in America to attack and go against whites. We are now evil supremacists, we're Nazis, we're fascists. We've already been genocide under the affirmative action program, from education to employment, and now it has escalated. So we have some real serious factors going on here. The unfortunate truth is this, brother. When you mention the word genocide to a society of people, in America in particular, and you ask them what it means to them, they are under the implication, due to the brainwashing and by design, that that simply means to kill off. That is not the case. You and I both know, and so does Karen, that there are many forms of genocide, and they're mentioned in the UN Articles of Convention concerning genocide. So the intervention to help your people is coming from the likes of people like Karen here in the U.S., myself, and a few or a handful of others in the UK that are really crying out and appealing to our government to intervene. I'm not sure, brother, that it's going to happen. And I hate to say that, Karen, but can you chime in on it?
Yeah, I actually do not think it's going to happen. Because if it were going to happen, when Trump tweeted about sending Pompeo, and when all these people, including Skulk and Steve Hofmeyr and other people, went to the embassies in South Africa and put them on notice that they had blood on their hands if they did not intervene, and they got absolutely no response, then would have been the time. So it didn't happen, and I don't think it's going to happen. Like everything else in Washington these days, it's just bread and circuses. That's all it is.
I would agree.
I want to say it's also because maybe she doesn't know my background. And when you speak to her about the embassies, I hail from two organizations. The one is not an organization, it's an actual political party registered with the IEC, etc. That's called National Conservative Party. And then also from the Black Monday movement. Black Monday, you will recall there's a big Black Monday movement after the killing of the farmer in Klopmuts in the Western Cape. And then it built up to where we actually formed a formal registered non-profit company in South Africa to run these things. And we had this program where we turned up at the American and the Australian, later on even the Brazilian embassies, and delivered our documents directly by hand to them, amongst the memorandums, petitions, etc., footage of what is going on in South Africa, and also pertaining to our right to self-determination. Now, initially, we got quite a cold shoulder from everybody, but in our subsequent meetings and subsequent follow-up actions at these embassies, especially the Americans became very friendly. But, and here's the but, Karin is quite right. We have not received any formal action yet. So they turned their attitude to be very accommodative and very friendly, but no action. So it's very troubling if that is going to be the case. It seems to me that they just simply lulled us into the belief that something will happen, but it's going to happen sometime in the future, just back off now. We heard what you're saying, but just back off now. That is the feeling I'm getting from the situation at this point in time.
Vicky?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with Black Monday. I am familiar with Black Monday. And like you here, as I stated before, when we make our appeal to our government, both federally and through the state, and I filed a writ of mandamus against Greg Abbott already in the past to force his hand to commit to stopping the invasion through Mexico. Unfortunately, it fell on deaf ears, much like your experience in there in your country. Outside of our groups, we are getting very little, if any, response from anyone in support of stopping this white genocide, either in your country or from escalating further in my country. I do know that we have some people in England who are also being very vocal that have South African roots. And I really do not know what progress they've accomplished. Are you aware, Karin?
No. They are doing the same thing we're doing. They're trying really, really hard. But as I see it, any country that so far has taken up the South African cause are using white South Africans' dire circumstances as a political football. It is more a political issue that they, the same as here, the Democrats against the Republicans. Everything the Republicans say, the Democrats are going to argue with. So it's the same kind of thing. It just gives them something more to argue about, and it is not... they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah, especially the Australians, because a lot of hype was created in South Africa relating to the Australians now coming to our aid, that making it more easy to immigrate into Australia and the visas and all these things. But you're quite right. It was simply a short-term political football being kicked around at that stage in Australia. It's quieted down tremendously. So I can't foresee. It was in any event also not the Australian government per se. It was one of smaller political parties that went on the rampage on the issue in Australia. So I can't foresee that there will be effective action from those quarters. Look, our call is a simple one. The Australians are not going to have an impact that we need. It's basically going to be one of the strong European nations or the Americans. For us, it's my opinion, it's a waste of time to go into the smaller nations, especially nations in the Commonwealth. They are not going to stir the water to the extent that we need. We were going to need a power as big as the United States or the European Union to intervene. Now, I will come back to that because we have had the Dutch now during last week tabling and getting through a resolution relating to expropriation. But strangely enough, not about farm murders.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that was also very strange to me, Karen.
Yeah, and also I find that very difficult to believe that they're actually, you know, it is the conservatives and what are called the far right in any political spectrum in any country. If you don't agree with the New World Order, then you're far right, alt right, a neo-Nazi, all of those things. It is those people that are talking on behalf of South Africa, but they don't seem to have power in their own countries. So it bothers me that once again, they're going to raise the hopes of South Africans and nothing is going to come of it.
I think that the far right, let's call it that, the far right, they are sincere in what they are doing.
Yes, but they don't have the power.
They don't have the power. It's a simple thing. Realpolitik, going back to Bismarck, in realpolitik, it goes about power. They don't have the power to get the movement going.
Yes.
And mainstream politicians still see so-called white genocide in italics as a conspiracy theory. And it's portrayed in the media as a conspiracy theory. That is what Ramaphosa is writing on, because Ramaphosa is going out in mass media and saying, but these white South Africans are lying. These immigrants in the other countries, these expats, they are lying. It's a conspiracy. It's not even really happening in South Africa, because there is even picked up on that. And he's even playing that ball. And that is why the mainstream is simply not moved by the images they see on TV and the images they see on Google, because it's portrayed to them as being fake. It's fake news. It's a conspiracy theory. It's people with makeup on. It's not a dead farmer.
Yeah,
that's the question that I'm getting. Becky, what's your input on this?
Well, I can tell you this: the terminology conspiracy theory, or the term conspiracy theory, was created by the CIA to silence the whistleblowers, and the media has been used to propagate that theory over many years. This is not a new terminology, but it's actually used to perform a character assassination on a truth teller. That's what it is. And unfortunately, here in America, and I think one of the reasons that we're not gaining ground concerning the white genocide is just a few years back, Farrakhan, and I'm going to cover something after I make this statement that is going to ring a bell for you, Karen. It's really going to turn a light bulb on for you. Farrakhan had openly and publicly called for 10,000 black Muslim men to commit murder against whites and even infants, children, okay? And he called it publicly. It was on video. I went after him. I went to the ACLU. I went to the Texas Civil Liberties Union. Finally, I went to Ann Aldridge's office. Her partner called me back after I had been rebuked by the ACLU and by the Texas Civil Liberties Union. And he laughed at me. He said, whites cannot claim, you ready for this, racism, and it would never make a court docket. You'd be laughed out of the courtroom. Whites cannot claim racism. Now, that's been set up by design through a socialist that they revere here called Martin Luther King, and the Socialist Party or Communist Party in government that created the civil rights movement, which is anything but civil. And we have been seriously oppressed and genocide since that movement was put into law. And so when we approach The Hague, we're getting the same result as if we approach Washington or our state capitals to try to gain ground to get someone with authority that has been elected as a representative to us to stand for us in Congress and call, if need be, even a military intervention into Africa. Or at least open the gates to the white population, the Afrikaners, to be able to make flight to the U.S. for asylum. They're letting the Negroes in. They have been for years. They have formed a coalition, this is where it's going to ring a bell for you, Karen, with the Muslim Brotherhood, the BLM, the La Raza movement, which is the Mexican invaders coming through our border, the MS-13, the terrorist organizations that have come through the border, and our own children, our white apologists that have been brainwashed through the colleges and the education system here to hate their own skin, to form a coalition against the elders, the whites, their parents, their grandparents, to annihilate us. And this is the movement that's taken place in America. So essentially what they've done is they've formed this giant army with many arms, the Communist Party, the Islamic Party, the BLM, La Raza. And we are in serious dire straits here, and it is going to be horrific. Because in America, we still have our weapons, remember? We still have our Second Amendment in most states. It will be a bloodbath.
But surely they know that, Vicky.
They don't care because they have weapons too, you see. They're anything but afraid of us. We have been outnumbered intentionally. The whites have not been the majority in this country for over 40 years. Your eyes do not lie. Anywhere in America, the white man or woman is the minority. It's very obvious, but people still believe the lie that they've been told that we are the majority and we are the privileged. And meanwhile, the genocide continues to grow. Just like in Africa. You never warned them.
Yes, because speaking of our majority in the United States, maybe in numbers, you still number as majority. I don't know if that's even the truth. But half of that white population of yours is so brainwashed, well, more than half of that population is so brainwashed that you can't rely on them in any event to secure the existence of their own race anymore. So it becomes a numbers game once again, the same as in South Africa. Before the transition into democracy, so-called democracy, because this is not democracy, it's hardline communism. But before we slipped into that, we were also a majority in our white areas in South Africa, and we simply became a very, very small minority of 8% after the democratization of South Africa. And as such, we will never have political power again. It's impossible. You can't outvote a communist government with a 8% minority, which is in itself also split. So it's a simple numbers game of splitting not only ourselves, all the other opposition groups, all the other minorities in South Africa. And exactly the same is happening on your side. It's interesting, Becky, you're speaking of Louis Farrakhan. I followed Farrakhan for many years to see what was going on around him. And his so-called anti-Semitism. I mean, he will go on rants for hours and hours, claiming the Jews to be conspirators, the conspirators, and everything bad and even worse than what Adolf Hitler himself would have said about the Jews. But somehow he just simply gets away with it. Now, for me and you, if we say anything wrong about the Jewish population, by tomorrow, somebody will turn up at your door and most probably come and arrest you. So it's always interesting to see that Louis Farrakhan can do and say what everyone, as in South Africa, the same is happening, and no action is taken against him. Can you just maybe elaborate on that also for us?
Karen.
Becky?
What's that?
Becky, we're finding difficulty hearing you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
How do you feel about what the brother said in reference to, the knock on the front door? That's insanity.
Yes, I was alluding to the double standard of where these black leaders can basically say anything they want. They can even attack the Jewish community and get away with that. But if we do it, we end up with somebody coming to knock at our doors. I think in America, it's exactly the same as in South Africa.
Yeah, we see a lot of that going on here. We have a lot of political prisoners and even assassinated individuals by our own government who target the people who are making leeway to fight back against, listen, diplomacy or democracy, a democratic government is an arm of socialism. What you seek is true freedom through a republic sovereignty. And they laugh at us when we claim a democracy here in America because we've been brainwashed to believe that democracy is a good thing. And under the guise of democracy, American military has invaded almost every nation at some point that had a sovereignty or their own freedom from the IMF. I mean, these fingers are very long that have orchestrated the demise of humanity. And people embracing democracy don't understand that they're being ruled by, the same as if a king ruled over you, being ruled by a theater of freedom. There is no freedom in a democratic government. They are a corporation. Their best interest served is for one another and for the corporate buyer. That is a fact. That is through research. That's not a conspiracy. That is a well-known fact. Every country that the American military has invaded, including World War II, we've funded both sides. We've gone in. We've demonized the leadership. We've removed the sovereignty and enslaved the people. We destroy the country and send the corporate giants in to rebuild it. And we take over the resources, we implement a diplomatic government that will work with the UN and the thugs in Congress right here in D.C. and toe the line, do what they're told to do, and then the IMF goes in and takes over the banking. That is a fact. Those are researched, well-given facts. That's factual. And so if there's no monetary gain, you understand, if there's no monetary gain for America to come in and militarily stop the genocide, which is a global plan, it's not going to happen. We've appealed to Congress. Afroforum appealed to Congress. We filed the writs. We've gone to The Hague. We've done everything we can to try to help our brothers and sisters in South Africa, and it's been to no avail. It's going to take a rising up of the people to fight back. And unfortunately, what has happened to you there is you become the vast majority, minority. What is the white population in Africa now? It's less than 4 million, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's about 4.5 million tops.
Okay, you have 4 million people trying to fight.
20,000 a month that's emigrating.
Right.
So yes, the numbers are dwindling. It's a genocide by all means. And I think we must also look at the definitions of genocide, because even in South Africa, the perception is there that genocide is something like in Rwanda, where they run into the streets and start chopping one another upwards with a spanker. And that is not what genocide is. Genocide is a legal term to to describe the killing, the deciding, it's a Latin word, but of a genus, of a type. In other words, it's all the means and all the way of how do you get rid of a certain ethnic group. So it's not only physical killing. Now, we're experiencing physical killing, but it's not only that. It's also pertaining to language. It's also pertaining to pushing them out of the economy. To limit their means of existence, attack their culture, all those things. It's all part of genocide as per the formal definitions by the United Nations themselves. You can maybe also explain to us your views on this.
Yes, we're experiencing that here. It's the cultural change. It's the erasing of history, the truth about our history and heritage. It's erasing the language. It is erasing a cultural being. It's like you said, it's forcing a group of people. I'll give you an example. The average Muslim family has 5 to 9 children. The average Hispanic or Mexican or Central American family also breeds 5 to 9 children. The average age of birth for the first child is the mother is 15 years of age. Now, if you look at the white population, we try not to breed outside of our means. By that, I mean not we don't breed so many children we can't afford them. And so we're vastly being outbred. We're being culturally mixed, which causes cultural mixed breeding, and they're doing everything they can to breed out the white genetic human being. If they can't breed you out, they're going to kill you off. They oppress you through pushing you out of positions in college. Now we're seeing here in America more commercialism. It's mainly blacks and Hispanics. We see it in Hollywood. They're rewriting and remaking movies, old movies, that, you know, the hero was white. Now it's an all-black cast, right down to your sitcoms. They're doing this intentionally, and this is part of what you're speaking of, eliminating a culture of people by any means necessary. And by any means necessary includes the annihilation through murder, torture, and incarceration.
Yes, which you already experience on your side, and we're experiencing proportionally to a much higher extent. Because we can go into the... actual numbers, we don't know how many white people are in the bodies, where black people intentionally murder white people purportedly as a so-called crime, but we know there's also a racial element and a political element. We know that because it comes through in court cases where they would simply say, well, we killed them because they are white. We see it in the modus, how these murders take place. It's done in the most heinous ways, the most terrible ways to spread terror. So we know these things. And proportionally wise, I mean, even the police statistics speak of nearly 4,000, if not more, farmers that have been killed in South Africa, mostly then white farmers in South Africa. You're speaking a lot of AfriForum. I've my own problems with them, so I'm not going to discuss them on this program. But from many years, other very realistic and sincere activists in South Africa has been following up on this thing of farm murders. So it's very well known in South Africa what's going on. It's very well known by now in the United States what's going on relating to so-called farm murders. In the numbers game, it's tremendously many people of a certain type that has been killed in South Africa. And coming back to the naming of what's going on, I've had big trouble and big problems with people calling it so-called farm murders in South Africa, because now it's become intertwined with the land issue. So the people that started to call the white genocide in South Africa farm murders actually did us an extreme disservice. because it's now a perception that only white farmers, those people living on the land, are being attacked. And that is simply not the truth. It's a blatant lie. It's an attack on all white people. In cities, in the towns, all the crimes, it's against white people. It's not against farmers. It's white. But now the perception has been created, especially in America, by people like AfriForum, that it's only farmers. They try to play politically correct. We criticize them. We say to them, guys, it's not going to work. It's going to blow up in your faces, and it has blown up in your faces. So to my view, it's an unfortunate thing that we now sit with this issue. And I'm taking a little bit of time now. I draw it directly now to what happened in the Netherlands last week, where their parliament went out, and there were two resolutions. The one was about the farm murders, or the murders in South Africa, investigation of murders in South Africa, and the other one pertained to expropriation of land. And only that second motion of expropriation of land was carried through. Once again, pertaining to, I think, the confusion in the Dutch parliament relating to who's actually being killed in South Africa. So it saddens me that we did not tackle the real issue. And I'm speaking of we, but collectively, we did not tackle the real issue in South Africa much earlier, and rather called it only farmers. Now, our farmers are being murdered. And it became a diluted struggle for us, a diluted cause for us to go and chase after.
Absolutely, Scott, because not only that, but there are so many arguments about actually how many farmers have been murdered. Now, one organization says 4,000 and something, another organization, I saw the other day, figures that said only 1,900. So if we are now talking out every day about murder in South Africa and white genocide, and 1,900 people have been murdered in 25 years, how ridiculous do we sound? So
it becomes ridiculous. It's not because they are white. They are not murdered because they are white. It's murder because they are sitting on farms. That's an easy target for criminals. So the whole gist of what's actually going on. And I'm getting angry. You will hear this in my voice.
Too.
The actual gist of what is going on, the murder of a race, is now being confusedly portrayed to the outside world as something only pertaining to farmers in the force and his criminal. That's where the lie comes in. And that's why Americans are the overseas, and they prepare this confused version of what's going on and not tackling the real issue of a race being exterminated in South Africa today.
Yes. And as you said, we have to look at the stages of the meaning of genocide, because, Scott, we've discussed this many times, the mere destruction of your language, which means not only your language, but your schools, your books, your culture, your heritage, that alone is enough. But then you have the dehumanization of us as settlers, cockroaches, Mlungus and all of those things that they call us, right? We fit into all of those categories. But if we have our own organizations touring the world and going to visit governments and giving conflicting numbers of farm murders only, when we talk about murder, if you look at the real number of murders in South Africa by the state's own numbers, 500,000 white and black, but 500,000 plus murders have been committed in that country in 25 years. A million. Now, by anybody else's standards, including Interpol and including the police themselves, who say that at least 40% of crimes are not reported to the police, and then you take on top of that the government changing means of death to natural causes, because you didn't die instantly at the scene, you died a week later in hospital, so it was natural causes. You add all of that together, and it's more likely 1 million deaths. Now, if you talk about that number, then we're seriously talking genocide. But nobody wants to talk about it.
And Karen, I'm taking the guest time now, but I just wanted to give her the frustration that real activists in South Africa is feeling. After the Trump treaty, you will remember the ruckus in the South African media about Trump now also
lying
about white genocide. And then this journalist, it's a black journalist from Radio 702. He put little Ernst Roots from AfriForum on the spot, and he said to Ernst Roots, yeah, but you were saying it's white genocide. And then Ernst Roots, by his stupidity, he said, no,
uh-huh.
I'm politically correct. I never said it's a genocide. And boom, there it goes, 15 years of activism by real activists down the drain in one day. And that is what angers real activists in South Africa. That is why we are not seeing any response from the U.S. or any response from Europe. They are laughing at us because people like this kills the actual cause of what's going on. They are given a rising ovation in the United States when they get there. They go to Washington. They walk around the streets of Washington. And they are seen as the people conveying the message, but they are lying. They are blatant liars, and they are doing it for financial gain. Full stop.
Well, of course, that's Hegel dialogue. And they're twisting the words. They're twisting the information. And Google is a huge part of it. You understand? They're changing the history. I'll give you a for instance. When I connected the BLM to Yahoo, the way I did this was, I was going after the leadership in the BLM for obvious reasons, and they were attacking, beating, killing whites, and it was called random crime. But they were targeted because they were white, so it's actually genocide, right? So the courts, the judges, you know, the prosecuting attorneys, the police departments, they wouldn't call it what it was. So I appealed to the government. And the government bases their reaction on statistical data. So I start looking into who's connected to who by trolling their profiles on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on Facebook. And I start seeing this vast connection to Uhuru groups out of Africa. And then when I started doing my research on Uhuru, it clearly stated who they were. They were a black socialist organization formed in the Africas, blah, blah, blah. Well, just months ago, I was speaking with another host on a radio show that I was revealing the genocide on, and I told him to pull up the information on Google concerning Uhuru, and I was going to connect the dots for him and tell him we had been hosting them in Florida and give the convention center name and the city. For many years, and when I say we, I'm saying that the BLM has been using tax dollars and donations to represent Uhuru in the United States. And this was long before anybody had heard of the BLM in America, but it was under Obama's regime. So if you go to Google now, it says that Uhuru is a white nationalist Nazi party. I am not kidding you. So they're rewriting history, which is a part of the genocide. But what it does is it assassinates the character of the truth teller, because we're telling them factual information, and as quick as we can get it out, they change it on the internet for Google search, which is what most people use, correct? So this is bigger than anyone can imagine. The UN and The Hague have chosen a deaf ear for us. The government in the United States has chosen a deaf ear for us. And we can tie it all into money and a well-orchestrated over 100-year plan. For instance, the history of the whites in the Cape versus when they first saw a black man. If you start trying to find that research on the internet, it's going to be gone. And that makes us the liar, correct? So in America, statistically, even if you look up demographics for census, in anywhere in America, rural or otherwise, much of the data has been omitted or not updated since 2013. 2013 to 2016 is going to be about the last census that you can pull up on geographical data here, on demographical data. They don't want you to know the truth about who is where.
Yeah.
By design.
And then that
go
all
ahead,
tie, you know, that all ties back straight into the genocide of whites in the world, because I don't know if the exact figure is 7 or 9%, but that's the percentage of world population that whites are. Now, that is approximately the percentage of whites to other colors in South Africa. So South Africa is absolutely a microcosm of the world. And we, how long have we been screaming this, all three of us? How long have we been saying, pay attention to South Africa because it's the petri dish for the rest of the world?
It was years upon years, more than a decade. Exactly, Carmen, yes.
And yet who's listening? Nobody. And now they are absolutely determined to silence us. We're being taken off Facebook. We're being taken off Twitter. We're being taken off. Our websites are being, gaslighting, Becky, that they hide you away, that you just don't come to the top of the pile.
Absolutely. They're shadow banning us. They've removed us from YouTube. They've removed us from Ustream.
Yes.
They've removed us and blocked us from Twitter. I am right now on three profiles on Facebook and FaceTime jail. My last infraction was a statement to a congressman that we are ready to try and hang for treason most of the government in D.C. and their cohorts. That got me a ban. I spoke truth. I didn't say we're going to go in and kill them. I didn't say we were going to murder them. I didn't say anything like that. I said, we are tired. We are ready to do what needs to be done to stop the madness. And I caught a 30-day ban.
Becky, I don't know if you know about Steve Hoffman in South Africa. You know Sunet Bridges. Now, Steve is way, way more famous in South Africa than Sunet was. He's a great singer and an activist. Now, whether you like him or don't like him is not the point. Right. So he now, Zindi Mandela, who is Mandela's niece, as far as I know, she's the ambassador, South African ambassador to Denmark.
For the Dutch, right.
To Denmark. So she sends out this tweet that she hopes all white South Africans are shivering in their boots about their land being taken away, and so on and so forth. We must be terrified. So, Skulk, you take over here because you've got a better command of what exactly happened with Steve. Okay, I think we may have lost him for the moment.
Then Steve. Hello, Karen.
Yeah, I can hear you now, Skulk.
Excellent, Karen. Yes, Steve goes back on Twitter and he answers Zinzi. It's not that he started this squabble on Twitter. But he says two things. The first thing that he says is, Lindsay, you must remember, as ambassador to South Africa, you in the service of the state. You work for the state, and the state is funded by the taxpayer, and therefore you work for me. I'm your boss, which is technically correct. Which is technically correct. A civil servant, the boss, the employer of the civil servant is the taxpayer, because that is where your money comes from. That's the first thing that he says. The second thing is, he says, well, if you threaten me that you will come and take my land and by implication also my means of production and my life and all these things, then I will oppose you and if need be, he didn't even say it as our chef, but I will kill you basically. That's the gist of what he said, which is also technically correct. You have a right. In terms of natural law, you have a right to defend your property. You have a right to defend your safety and your life. It's the truth. And now he's up on charges, formal criminal charges, for incitement of violence. Now, if they get a court precedent on this, it's basically going to silence everybody in South Africa, speaking into that direction. Everybody on our
wow.
side, not on the other side, because the other side can run in the street. The BLF can go on public television and say we're going to kill all the white people and their children and their wives and their animals and everything above them and under the ground.
Yeah.
And they're not prosecuted. But on our side, if they get those charges to stick to Steve Hofmeyr, they're basically cutting all of us down to the ground. We're not going to be able to even speak about these things in the future.
And so, as you know, they've already attacked the expat because we are bringing South Africa into disgrace by spreading lies about South Africa. So they are going to try very, very hard to silence us as well, because essentially a lot of us are still South African, and we should live by South African law. I don't have South African citizenship anymore, but a lot of people still do. So expats are then also going to be silenced, and then what? Who is going to stand up for these people?
Oh, I went after Mandela.
What you're portraying to us now. I think you followed the story of this Greek guy, Dr. Vallos,
yes.
I think it's his name.
Yes.
He's a South African of Greek origin. What happened here was he was on holiday in Greece, not in South Africa, in Greece. And in his own stupidity, because it's stupid to do these things, but in his own stupidity, he made a video with his cell phone while he's sitting on a Greek beach, and he's saying the K word. He's saying the K word is the same as the N word on your side. He's saying, well, look at this beach. There's no gay people here, and therefore it's like heaven. And he transmits this onto social media. And immediately they pick it up. Now he is on charges now, up criminal charges in South Africa. But also, and this stunned me. You remember when this came out? I said to you, I'm a lawyer, and I'm stunned by what's going on here. But I'm stunned because he's now also up on criminal charges in Greece. He's
wow.
going to be sent over to Greece to also stand trial on that side. Now, how does that work? He's not even a citizen of Greece, but he's been charged criminally in that country for something relating to the South African perception of the K word. Now, that's scary, because that means, Karen, if you have a slip of tongue or you say the wrong thing in the United States on this precedent, then they will charge you overseas for saying something about South Africa. That's the implication of what's going on.
Yeah. I went after Mandela, sister. I went to her Facebook, and I messaged her, and I told her she needed to be very careful of concerning her racism. And I worded it in a way that's not a threat. It's just telling her, you're not in the confines of Africa all the time. You're not in a safe place. You have a false sense of security, because what she stated doesn't only affect the Africans, but their terrorists are coming to America, and she's inciting them here in America. We're seeing more and more information about reparations for blacks. Isn't it odd that they never talk about the white slaves who were more by number, or the Indian, American Pinaki, or the Chinese, or any other race, just the Negro? You see, this
yeah.
is by design. This is why they're rewriting the history books in the state of Texas. The School Board of Education has been directed to vote yes to erase the truth about tariff and secession being any part of the Civil War, that it was simply about reparations for the blacks. This is how they're vilifying us and validating the murder to take away the farmers' land in Africa, you see, by making statements like taking away the land that they stole.
When
clearly they didn't steal it. But see, it gives the world a valid reason not to feel sorry for them. To say, well, they should leave. I have my own people telling me all the time, well, if you're white and you're in Africa, why aren't you fleeing? Well, because they won't let you out. You're ignorant. You need to understand the process of getting a visa for travel. You need to understand the amount of money that it takes. You need to understand this is those people's livelihood. That's their homeland. They were born there. Many of them have farms that were handed down to them that weren't stolen from anybody.
I think Skulk is also very much aware of that question. Why don't you just leave? Why should they leave, number one? And how can they leave, number two? And where would they go?
Right.
Yes,
who's
going to
take them?
Let's pick up on that one. My family, the Van der Merwe family, has been in South Africa since 1661. I think your pilgrim fathers came to South Africa to America after that. Now, if you then, by that definition, now being forced on us, say that we are settlers, Skulk Van der Merwe is a settler, after four centuries in the country, then it means that all the white Americans and all other people that came willingly to the United States, all the immigrants from the Eastern Europe, all the Polacks, all those people, they are all then settlers, and they must go back to Europe. That is actually the narrative. Now, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous. If you're born in a country, you are by international law a citizen of that country.
Right.
How could that be stripped away from you? But it is being stripped away. It's already been stripped away by calling us all these names of settler and all these things. But yes, it becomes a practical problem of how do you move 4.5 million people out of the country? If those people in the first place were willing to move. We are not willing to move. I will not move. This is my country more than anybody else in this within the borders of this country. So yes,
I agree.
It's a very terrible thing that's been committed here. It's very terrible.
Well, a man is his character, and a man is his integrity, and that is your land, that is your rightful homeland, it is your birthright to stand and fight for what belongs to you. And when I'm asked that question on Facebook in these discussions, I simply put it back to them. Well, we're being invaded. Are you ready to give up everything you own? Because that's what you're doing. Where are you going to flee to? Who is going to give an American political asylum? Who's going to give a white American an asylum based on ethnic cleansing? Who's going to do it? Well, nobody. I can tell you already, nobody. There's nowhere to run. We have nowhere. There's nowhere to run. Are you going to run? That's what I pose to them.
And again, Becky, they don't understand that in America you still at this moment still have the numbers. You are still the majority, not for very much longer. It could be happen next week with the next 100,000, 200,000 coming across the borders that you finally outnumbered. But right now, you still have the numbers, you still have the power, and you still are armed. All of those things, unlike white South Africans. And yet, Americans are still sitting on their backsides with their thumb up their nose and doing nothing about it. They're not even making a fuss against those 540 whatever people in Congress who are ruling with an iron fist 300 million people.
It's 400 plus million. Yeah,
well, how does that make sense? How does that make sense to anybody?
Because the people still believe that they have chosen their rulers. And they still believe that those rulers are working for them. We know what the problem is. It's the brainwashing. From the time you are a child in America and you start attending school, the first thing they do is implant in the minds of the children a little recited pledge every morning. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. And they forget about the republic part of it. They go with the democracy. And one nation under God. Now they're omitting God from the pledge. Because we're not a Christian nation. We weren't founded on Christian values. And when we pointed out that we can prove that that is incorrect, it is quickly erased from the history and the foundation of America. You see, people still think that the Crown Court means England rules our court system. The Crown Court simply means the papal, the Catholic Church, the Pope is dictating our court system. That is the true crown. The crown rules England. Well, it's not the monarchy of England. It's the Pope, the most corrupt, evil person in the world is the Pope of the Catholic Church, and he sits at the Vatican. And he tells us we can't have borders and walls, but there's a border all the way around the Vatican. And he's got a Swiss guard that will kill you if you try to breach that border. You see? He's also having the Catholic churches fund this invasion globally with your tax money, because 30% of our tax money is collected for the Pope. Most people don't understand these things, and as much as we tell them, they don't retain it. It doesn't hit an emotional nerve for them. They can only grasp what their passions are. Most of them are just passionate about certain things, and other things are insignificant to them. This is why they're all sitting on their duft. This is why they all have their thumb up their nose. But there is no excuse why an oath keeper who pounds his chest online and tells me his oath is one for life against foreign and domestic and refuses to get with his other oath keeper brothers and do what the Second Amendment was actually put in place for, and that is to remove a tyrannical and oppressive government. It's very frustrating.
And then you are going to find yourself in the exact same position as white South Africans, because if the Republicans lose this coming election, you are going to have your firearms taken away. Everybody talks about civil war coming in South Africa. It's not going to happen. The numbers are just totally overwhelming. Civil war can happen between black tribes, but I don't see, I see the whites trying to defend themselves maybe, but it's not going to create a civil war. There are just too many people against
them.
They're already
in a civil war. That's the same thing that's going on here. We're already in a civil war. But again, perception, sister, it's like when you say, what is genocide to most people? It's like when you say, what is civil war to most people? Well, it's blood and guts in the street. No, sir, you're being attacked from every angle. You're in a civil war for your employment. You're in a civil war for your money that you earn through forced taxation. You're in a civil war for your property, again, through forced taxation. And you're being extorted at every angle. You are in a civil war for your culture. You're in a civil war for your history. You're in a civil war for your country. And
your
people
language
just
there
don't
as
see
well.
Because right. And they just
South Africa with the Afrikaners, here with the Hispanics. If you are not bilingual here, you can speak 20 languages, but if you do not speak Spanish, then you are not bilingual. You know, and this is exactly South Africa. And I can tear my hair out. I hear Scott's total frustration, and I feel the same, and I feel yours and mine as well, because we have screamed about it for a decade and more, and here we are with everything that we prophesied is happening so fast now, and still people won't listen.
And we can't bring our numbers together. That I personally, and I'll make this a public announcement, would get on a plane today and fly into South Africa and stand with my white brothers and sisters and die for them if need be. You understand? I would do it in a heartbeat. But how many people, and I have to do that, but how many people have the means to do that? I fly free, you see. But so we can't get more. And it's not just, and I want to say something, because if I don't say this on this show, people are going to believe the racism is coming from our side. I know many blacks who defiantly hate what's going on. They hate the genocide. They're not on board with killing the whites. They're not on board with reparations.
Yep, and in South Africa too, Skulk, have you noticed how more and more black people are speaking out as it affects their income and their way of life? Have you noticed that recently there have been a huge increase in blacks speaking out against what's going on in South Africa?
Absolutely. Here I have.
I work on the ground level with black leaders. And the average black leader in South Africa is not for what the ANC or the communists are standing for. Yes, they are voting ANC because the ANC is delivering to them and to their communities. But they do not support us. The vast majority of black people in South Africa just simply wants to live an ordinary life, go to work, come back, watch TV and go to sleep. If they don't have a TV, sit on the outside of their house, speak a little bit in the way that they've done in their cultural way for millennia, and go to sleep. Ordinary people do not want to take part in this nonsense. That is on ground level, that is my feeling of this, and this is my experience of this. But you're sitting with the BLF. Let's speak about the BLF. It's basically the same as the BLM. It's an extremely left-wing, so-called black nationalist movement in South Africa that's getting screen time on TV at least once a day. In the mainstream, mainstream media, you will find the BLF on a daily basis. How big is that organization? There are less than 200 members. National Conservative Party, my party, on our books, have thousands of members. I'm not going to disclose exactly how many.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands of members. Have you ever heard in mainstream media about National Conservative Party? No. So in other words,
we're doing the same thing here, brother.
That all black people now buy in on this thing of we must genocide the white people, we must take their land, we must have reparations, all these things. But it's not. It's a very, very small minority that's been boosted by mainstream media because there's an agenda to do that.
We are considered a domestic terrorist group here now because they said so. It's like having a spouse that tells you to do something that goes against your safety. And you say, why should I do that? And they say, because I said so. Or your character is such and such. Well, why do you say that? Because I said so. That's what it's like here now. And we saw this coming. I asked if it was coming. God has given me the gift of discernment. He's given me the gift to be able to see the things that most people do not see, to retain the knowledge that most people can't retain. And he gave me a platform. And I've tried to warn the people, and I've tried to rally the people in support of South Africa, and I've tried to rally the people in support of America, and you just, for whatever reason, you know, it's biblical. They'll have eyes and they'll not see. They'll have ears and they'll not hear. You know, I mean, I'm just going to say it like it is. It's predicted. But it doesn't mean that we have to stop and fight, and it doesn't mean that we can't be effective. It means that we're going to have to find a way to collectively find that one or two or ten people in positions of power that will stand with us, even if it means that they are using us as a football in order for us to gain ground. Do you understand? Sometimes
you have to use their tactics. You spoke about the Oath Keepers. Now, from Skulk and my point of view, we have exactly the same problem because white people have just never learned the trick of standing up together. Never, ever, ever. Now, since I've been in America, I've seen the same thing that I saw in South Africa. The blacks do it so well. One stands up and shouts, and immediately the mob and their voice loud and things get done. We are just never learned that trick and do not understand that many voices make one damn loud voice. And that is something we have to learn for our own self-defense. We do not need to get violent. We just have to stand together.
Well, see,
don't get it all right, because people don't understand that. They think that if you give people a resistance, and then you're doing something beyond what the law is saying. I'm a lawyer, and therefore I will sometimes tell my clients, let's get into a civil case, I will tell my clients, but stand on your rights. It is your right already. You don't have to go to court to go and find a court to make a release. It's already your right to do this or that or the following, because the law already is on your side. And that is what people do not understand. Even white people in South Africa, they do not understand it. You guys over in America, you don't understand it. You yesterday or the day before, you said there's some inalienable rights that you have. And
yes.
People do not stand up for their rights. Now, it's not being illegal. You're not breaking the law if you stand up for your rights. What are the gay people doing? They've created rights. In my perception, it's created rights. And they are standing on their rights. Is that now illegal? Yes, a couple of years ago it was illegal, but it's not illegal anymore. But they are standing on their rights. Therefore, we must also just stand on our rights. Our right to our language, our right to our culture, our right to free economic activity, our right to our land, our right to own land, to be a citizen of the country that you are born in. Those are rights. It's not that,
well,
that
the people
the law must tell us this and make a ruling on it to make it legal. It's legal per se. If a person then wants to violate your right, in other words, if the BLF comes and say, I will kill you or I will take your land, in other words, he's violating your right. That is illegal. But you see, we've been brainwashed so that the illegal has become legal and vice versa. And that is why the average law-abiding citizen in South Africa and America is doing nothing, because he's been brainwashed into this and believes that if he stands on his right, he's doing something illegal. He's not. He's just simply defending his rights.
You made a very valid
point. In 1767, they challenged the British government at that point in time because they stood on their rights, inalienable rights as human beings, and said, we are now defending our rights. And that is what we need to do. We need to stand on our rights.
You've made a very valid point there, and that's something that most people don't understand. Inalienable rights are not rights that were given to us by current lawmakers. Those are unjust and unlawful and unconstitutional laws. But through the fear, the rule of government has installed a perception of fear of doing anything illegal. And I'm going to say something that is absolute fact in America. I don't know about your constitution in South Africa, but we have a little thing called the separation of church and state. Most people don't even understand that statement. They believe it means the separation of, I don't know, religious curriculum in a public school system that's funded by the government or the taxpayer. That is simply not the case. The separation of church and state meant that the government would not meddle in the affairs of the church, and that people had a religious freedom to practice their religion as they saw fit to do so as a congregation of worshipers. So what the American government did to intervene and have the church help to brainwash the sheeple at the podium is they told them no politics at the podium. We're going to give you a 501c3, which is going to exempt you from taxation, you see, which is illegal to begin with. Taxation in America was never meant for anybody but a federal government entity or their workers. But it's been implied everywhere. It's been initiated everywhere you can imagine. We are being taxed to death, right? So the people are afraid of doing anything illegal. And they believe the laws, the unjust laws that have been implemented and are being placed daily through stack bills in Congress, are actually things that they have to abide by. And they don't understand what an inalienable right actually is. And you see, when you have ignorance ruling you with fear, you tend to become a docile person. Now, in the Christian church, by direction of the pastors who have enjoyed this 501c3 and these world-traveling evangelists, they have taught the Christian people to be a docile individual, turn the other cheek, help the widow and the orphan. They don't teach you that Jesus said, sell your cloak and take up a sword. He didn't say stand back and be annihilated. He didn't say stand back and let government, who are corrupt, lead you into extinction. He never said that. But the church, the pulpit, the preachers, through their theology colleges, the theologians, will get up and preach to their entire congregations and on television that God wants you to turn your cheek, that this invasion is okay, that these people are just oppressed and want a better life, and that you've been a bad person because the history of your people is such and such, and you need to turn from your evil way and comply. You need to listen to government, and they'll beat you over the head with God said, give Caesar what is Caesar's, and they'll argue taxation based on that scripture that's been taught to them wrongfully. You see? So you have generations of docile individuals who have been brainwashed not just by government, but by the pulpit.
And by the schools, and by their extramurals, and by everywhere they go into being shamed about being white.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And all of those terrible things that I really do not suffer from, because luckily I didn't grow up in that kind of atmosphere, but I fear for our children. Skulk and Becky, we have 10 minutes left, so some closing thoughts
Wow.
from both of you, please.
A possible way forward, because I'm a person driven by results, and I want to see results. Where do we go from here? What course of action do we take from here, Becky, and what is your suggestions for us in South Africa?
I honestly think we need to change our plan and direction, because it's insane for us to continue to try to do the same things that are getting us very little to no result. I believe that we have to form a coalition, and we have to seek out those parties diligently that we can form that coalition with. And as crazy as this sounds, I believe we're going to have some black communities and groups in our coalition that will stand with us and speak and represent us as humanity and separate that division of color and race before we're going to be heard. They're not going to listen to us. We're white. We're the demons. We're the Nazis. We're the reason that everything is wrong in the world today. And that's been carefully crafted, and this is a well-thought-out plan that is to precision. This is why the BLM hosted Uhuru here in America, and now we see this movement. This movement didn't come about in America into full fruition until the BLM reared their ugly head in America and formed a coalition with the Muslim Brotherhood. You see? And then they started forming a coalition with the gays, the LGBT, who's been taken over and hijacked for political purposes. To create division and chaos is the very basis of conquering a nation or its people. And they have done it well. They've done it in England, in the UK, they've done it in Scotland, they've done it very well in Sweden and Germany and France and Spain. This is global. This isn't just South Africa and America. This is everywhere. And the whites are being demonized in every nation. Every nation. So I believe that, in my opinion, we're going to have to find other avenues to get our voice out, because we know we're being censored and shadow banned. I believe that we're going to have to be creative. And even if it means that we have to create a cable network, or we have to create an airway, a corporate airway, pardon me, to do what needs to be done to find the people that we need to find. But in America, and again, I don't know what you have to do in Africa, but I know that you're up against a huge wall. Parliament won't listen to you. It's being run by the idiots. Look at the level of education, and then look at the demonization in their own thought. I know you guys are being silenced there in these areas. We have to put pressure, Karen. I'm talking about you, me, and others here
yeah.
in America.
Yeah.
In D.C., we have to put pressure on them to act on the behalf of the Afrikaners, and we have to make them understand that we have noted that they have intentionally started bringing that to this country and staging it in different states. The article that I read today devastated me concerning how long they've been coming through the Mexican border and what trail they're taking to get here and who is setting them up. It's the Catholic Charities setting them up, the Congolese that just entered by the hundreds just last week that were placed in my state in San Antonio. I've already written a letter to Abbott today. And I'm going to pressure him and pressure him and pressure him until he understands that the state of Texas has the right to defend its border according to our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence from Mexico. You see, we live in a very unique state. We used to be another country.
Yep. Scott, you're...
Yes, indeed. I think we must go back to the Alamo then, eh? And be David Roth again, because that's going to save you, that's going to save us. So it's very enlightening to hear you speak, Becky. You're a highly knowledgeable person. I'm privileged to be in your presence tonight. And it's very high note to end up with. Because yes, of course Texas was always part of used to be part of Mexico. And you seceded from Mexico. You have your own Constitution. You have your own history relating to Mexico. So maybe that's the course of action that you need to take. I think that's a very intelligent way of looking at solving the problem relating to the borders of Texas, then at least. Let them go to New Mexico if they want to go to New Mexico, but keep them out of Texas. So yes, Karen, thank you very much for getting us this guest. I think we need to have on our visual on our TV stations.
Yes.
Thank you very much. This has been a terrific conversation that we had, and we need to follow this up also with actions, not only speaking, but also with actions. Thank you very much for your time, Becky.
Hey, man. Thank you, brother. I also am honored to have been on with you today, and thank you for the enlightenment. And anything that I can do for you, I'm at your disposal at any given time. I don't care what the hour.
I know that. Thank you so much, Becky. If you
thank
like
you,
to
Karen.
Us, please tune in, same time, same place next week. God bless South Africa. God bless the USA. And God help the world we live in today. And I'm playing out, apologies to you, Scott, with my favorite person, Jim Reeves. And God be with you till we meet again.
Amen. Thank you, Karen.
Oh, well, that didn't end so well. Thank you very much and good night.